Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at animal behavior with my very good friend and certified applied animal behaviorist, Patricia McConnell. Patricia, great to see you.
Hi, Larry. It's good to see you, too.
Oh, man, we're going to have some fun today, I hope. I'm sure.
Nah, it'll be boring. It'll be boring and dull. Can I go home now?
No, you've got so many exciting things to talk about. I know you were recently at the World Sheepdog Trials.
I was in England. I was in Scotland. I did a seminar in Edinburgh, a gorgeous city, by the way. And then went down to Cumbria, England, in the Lake District, which is drop-dead gorgeous. And who knew England had mountains, just FYI.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous there. And so, yeah, I was at the World Sheepdog Trials. Ironically and wonderfully, a good friend of mine who lives 10 miles away is on the U.S. World Team. With her dog Silk and Spot, Peg Anderson. So not only did I get to go see the trial, I got to root for my friend. But it was amazing. The finals, Larry, it was the most amazing teamwork of phenomenally skilled handlers and ridiculously talented dogs.
Yeah.
These dogs, they had to do a double outrun. They had to run about 500-600 yards to the right to pick up 10 sheep, bring them to the handler. Then they had to look back, meaning go get another group of sheep, and they were, half a mile away. I couldn't even see them. And the dog had to go find them and bring them back and then do even harder things. That was the easy part.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was so beautiful.
And how'd your friend do?
She did really well. She didn't make the finals, but I was really proud of her. She had a little boggle at the top, but her dog, after that, they picked everything up and just did a paw perfect run.
Oh.
I was really proud of her.
Okay.
She was great.
And so that was exciting. And some other exciting things. You're going to be speaking at a Wisconsin Humane Society.
There's lots going on. I'm speaking in Madison. I'm speaking in Milwaukee. The Milwaukee one is coming first next Thursday, October 13th. I'm doing a fundraiser for the Wisconsin Humane Society, which is just one of the countries. It's just a great shelter in Milwaukee.
It is.
And what's extra fun for me is I get to talk about cats. I so often talk about dogs, and obviously I love dogs and I love doing that, but I love cats too, and I love talking about them. So that's, if you just go to my website, that's the fastest, easiest way to find your way into there. There's also a dinner beforehand if you want to sit and schmooze, bring me pictures of your cat. So that, just go to my website, patriciamcconnell.com. That's next Thursday, the 13th. And then in Madison, there's a big seminar. I'm really excited. I'm doing Saturday. Ken Ramirez, the lead trainer from the Shedd Aquarium, who could basically train a spoon. I mean, the man.
Really good.
I kiss the hem of his pants. I mean, the man is just ridiculously talented, and he's a great speaker. I'm talking about all the recent discoveries about canine behavior on Saturday. He's speaking Sunday. So that's the 29th and 30th of October here in Madison. So, again,
Go to your website.
And come. We'd love to see you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you mentioned cats, and there are things. You can train cats to do things.
You can. Do you remember? And you know that now, but you didn't know that when we started.
No, I did not.
Do you remember the conversations we had on air where Larry was like, Trisha,
you can't train a cat.
And then he fell in love with a woman who loves cats, and the rest is history. So, yeah, and you can train cats. Cats are actually better than dogs at teaching us how to train animals. Because dogs are too easy sometimes. They're too good. They try so hard. What do they want? What does she want? What does she want? Not always, but often. And cats are like, yeah, what's in it for me? Which is pretty much how most animals behave. So as long as you understand that cats are willing to work for something they really want, and if you have whatever it is, whether it be a little piece of, you know, a wonderful piece of food, which works really well, or a head scratch, or a little play with a toy, or to go into another room. Can I tell you my favorite cat training?
Yes, and please.
It's the easiest one in the world.
Please.
This works for anybody who has a cat who wants to go from one place to another, but tends to do what cats do, which is sit at the boundary pondering. So if you have an indoor-outdoor cat like I do, or if you have a cat who wants into the screen porch, say, but you open the door and then they sit there, right?
Yeah.
Well, I need to think about this, which is actually exactly how cats behave in the wild. But and they're sort of checking out the territory, and are there other cats around? There's all kinds of great ethology about it. But basically, so here's what I did with Sushi and other cats, is I would open the door and count. 1, 2, 3. And then after 3, the door shuts. And what's hard is that you have to do that every single time when you get to 3. And you know what? You open the door, and on 2, your cat will decide. I'm either going to go in or I'm going to go out. And no more hanging around at the door with you begging them, please make up your mind. It's really slick. It's the easiest training you've ever done.
I love it. I don't have that. I haven't had that problem. Actually, telling you, Tiger has me trained perfectly.
Yeah.
He's so good at it. I mean, you know, in the morning I get up. About 5:15, he's mm-hmm. right there and down the stairs right ahead of me and get to the, you know,
food.
Get to you do, yeah, get to the litter box, clean that litter box
uh-huh.
out. Then it's back upstairs and it's, I have to sit down on the couch. And if I'm not petting in just the right way, there's a little nip on the.
Oh, I see. You're being instructed.
Yeah, little mm-hmm. nip. And so I keep that up for a time, and then he finally has decided he's been petted enough, and he walks away.
He's done. Have you noticed also that when a cat is on your lap, you're unable to answer the phone or the door? I'm sorry, I can't get up. I have a cat on my lap. I think that's their major purpose, to keep us from having to jump up every time the phone rings.
Well, Lauren in Eau Claire has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Lauren. Lauren, are you there? Oh, hold on a second. Well, now I think we should be able to hear you. Lauren, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, can hear you now. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. I have a kitty. She's a wonderful kitty. However, we have a litter box problem. She likes to urinate on, specifically on fake hardwood floors, like those laminate floors.
Hmm.
We've moved... we started out in a rental that had a laminate floor in the dining room, and she started it there. And we've now moved into a new house, and she has started it in the dining room that has a laminate floor. I could point out the areas where she would have an issue in this new house. We have tried everything. We've took her to the vet, cleared it medically.
Good.
We tried putting tinfoil in the areas where she would go because of the texture thing. We thought she wouldn't like it. She peed on the tinfoil. We've put litter boxes there. She would pee either in front of or behind the litter box on the laminate floor. We've tried sprays. We've tried the cat sound thing to get her out of the room,
mm-hmm.
and that worked. But then she just moved to a new area. We've tried everything with this kitty to try to get her to stop doing this and use the litter box. We've finally now resorted. We put her in a kennel at night because that's where she. That's when she tends to pee, and we feel so bad about doing that, but we just don't know what else to do. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, wow. You have tried a lot.
Yes,
good
that's
for
sure.
Good for you. Let me
and
ask
this
you.
This has been going on for about a year.
A year.
And we have a little baby now, and we're just kind of at our wits' end.
Yeah, it's a really tough one. Does she ever go in the box?
She does. She will poop in the box, and actually we found poop in areas of the house, but that's not a regular thing. She will poop in the box, and of course, when we have her in the kennel with a litter box, and the reason we do that is we don't have a door like to our laundry room where we would normally keep her.
Sure, okay.
She would go in the litter box in the kennel.
So she'll urinate in the box if she has no other place to go, but not otherwise. Is that right?
Yeah.
Pretty much it. Okay.
Yeah, boy. You know that. You know, you say there's nothing medically wrong with her, and. As you know, I'm a behaviorist, not a veterinarian, but I have to tell you, that sounds like a cat who learned at one point that it hurts to pee in the box. And that's a really common problem, especially if she's defecating in the box. Do you have several boxes now?
Well, we have one, and then, of course, the one that's in the kennel.
Okay.
When we first got two cats, I We tried using the two litter boxes, but we found that both of them just used one litter box anyway, so we took away the second one.
Okay. This is a tricky one. I wish I could do a house call. I'm wondering either if there had been a cat in that previous place you were that had urinated on that floor and so it smelled like urine, which is a great motivator for a cat to pee on it. So either that or maybe there was some problem with the box. Here's the generic advice. I hope it helps. If it doesn't, see if you can get a behaviorist to come in, a veterinary behaviorist or a certified behaviorist to come in and do a house call. Because clearly you've sort of done all the simple stuff. But a couple of things. One, obviously the foil didn't work. You might want to try feeding her where she tends to go. That's something you can try. If she was my cat, I would go back to my veterinarian and I would look at sort of beyond sort of the usual tests, because we all know it's probably happened to you. You've been to a doctor, you had a symptom and the doctor came back and said, I did the tests and they're all normal. And you're like, yeah, but.
Yeah, but. I'm not.
There are some things that cause urination to be painful or uncomfortable that may be motivating this. So that's just, I want you to, if you can, pursue this a little bit further. I would get some more boxes. I would try Feel Away or some kind of a calming. It's not a smell in that, you know, we can't necessarily smell it, but it can have a profound effect on behavior. So I would try.
What's it called?
Feel Away is one of the brands. It's basically a substance that is actually emitted by a cat when she is feeling calm and happy. It actually comes out of the glands of their cheek when they're in a good mood. Basically, it's a pheromone. And it doesn't work. It's not magic, but you can get that actually at any pet store. It's not magic, but it can really help. You can also talk to your vet about some kind of anxiety-related medication. Sometimes that has an effect. So I would try more boxes, feed her where she goes, prevent that when you can, pursue veterinary potential causes, work on her internal physiology with Feel Away, pheromones, and maybe even some other kind of medications to try and cause calming. So that's that's a start anyway. And I know it's not a start to you. It feels like an end, but hang in there. I think you can get this turned around. I've had a lot of luck with cats who've been going for long, long periods of time. You may not get it 100% turned around, but I think if you just keep trying, you can find what it is and get it turned around.
Thank you very much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest, certified applied animal behaviorist and dog trainer and cat trainer, and she trains me even once in a while to do things.
Occasionally I train myself, although not always successfully.
Judith Searce-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a behavior question, I hope you'll join in as we visit with Patricia McConnell. Larry Mueller here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, oh, my goodness, on our Facebook page, we have a really cool little picture here. And unfortunately, I forgot to turn the computer on your side, so that's too bad.
But I'll believe Larry.
From Amanda. I've learned so much from you, Patricia, Amanda says. And she
thank you.
Says, thanks so much for coming on the air. And I'll echo that.
And thank you, Facebook. And, you know, and I have one, too. I finally joined the current century. Yes. I think they're 4,500 friends, likers, whatever.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Wonderful people. Anyway, it's fun, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun. We have Jan in Waukesha next with a question or comment. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Larry and Patricia. My cat goes outside on a leash, and about a month ago, he ran into the house, and as soon as I took him off leash, he ran into the basement.
Ooh.
And he wouldn't come out of the basement unless he was coaxed with treats. And every time he would go by an open door or a window, he would lick himself. And so I took him to the vet, checking for fleas, bites, evidence of being attacked by another animal, and nothing came up. In my yard, I've seen a feral cat, a raccoon, and a skunk from time to time. Now the cat's stands at the edge of the door. I did hear your first training tip on counting to three. He sniffs and will occasionally go out, but after a few minutes, he just turns and runs in.
Aww.
And every time he does the same thing where he's licking himself.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure of the cause of the behavior or what we can do next.
Yeah, were you... So he goes out on a leash, so you were outside with him right before
yes.
you dashed in, and you saw nothing?
No.
Yeah, probably smell, scent related, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, you heard or saw something that was sort of beyond your range of attention at that point. Certainly, I've seen cats react with just extreme reactions to the scent of an unfamiliar cat. In
yes.
the yard, I've had cats attack the other cat in the house just because they smelled cat urine under
yeah.
a bush or something. So so what I do, I'm glad that he's starting to go outside again. What I do is I would go inside before he dashes back. So basically, you're gonna do a kind of counter conditioning. You're gonna take him outside, spend just a few seconds out there, maybe give him his favorite treats outside, and then long before he wants to leave, you go back inside. So you're almost turning the tables on him. So ideally, he'd be like, no, wait, I don't want to go back yet. I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really effective. Don't wait for him to run back, because that sets up a cycle of him being frightened and then learning that the way to make the fright go away, which is a very, you know, fear is a very aversive emotion, that he learns the way to get the fear to go away is to run away and go back inside. You want him to learn the way to get the fear to go away is to be outside. So go outside for 5 seconds, come back in.
Mm-hmm.
And do that. You might want to repeat it one or two times, but don't do it too much, because they can sensitize to that rather than desensitize.
Mm-hmm.
So go really slowly. And remember, you know, he doesn't need to be outside. You don't need to push this. Sometimes it can take 6 months
mm-hmm.
for cats to get over that kind of a trauma. So meanwhile, when he's not outside, I would sort of keep your – obviously you are, but be really curious. Keep your eyes and ears peeled. You might even want to get one of those sort of night vision kind of, you know, you can get these night vision binoculars and you can look out and see if you can see anything going out there at night. It might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do have lights positioned in the yard so that I can see, you know, look out and see if I'm...
Yeah,
that's good.
Or a trail camera.
This is what I was thinking. Get one of those motion
cams.
Sensor trail cameras. You put it out, leave it there, and then you get a picture of the, you know, mountain lion that happened to be walking through
yeah.
your yard.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary in Waukesha. We're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. How are you today?
Just great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking the call.
What can we do for you?
Well, my family and I have recently added a Great Pyrenees puppy form to our little family. We have a 4-year-old golden retriever, and Lily is just a wonderful dog, and she listens very well, which is odd for Pyrenees.
They're not known for that.
But she is now, she's approaching a larger size than our golden, and when any one of us come home and... You know, we open the door and they both come outside. She is starting to not necessarily jump, but at least stand up on her hind legs, and she's going to be a big girl.
Mm-hmm.
So she is just 8 months old, and I have, with all of my other dogs, they've always been large dogs, I use the knee thing in the chest, but her knee is, or chest is taller than my knee. What can I do short of grabbing a leash and putting it on her right away? And I'm not even sure that would be the right method to take.
Yeah, good question. And you're right. Once she's full grown, she's going to have her head up at your face and her paws on your shoulders. So good for you for getting started now. And 8 months is probably pretty big anyway. So there's some great things you can do. And what's best about them is that not only do they work, but they're positive and they're fun. So you're basically going to set up a training paradigm. You're going to have little tiny treats. You're going to have a whole bunch of them in a pocket or a little pack that you carry around, a little bait bag. They don't have to be too tiny because she's a Pyrenees. But so what you're going to do is you're going to teach her. First of all, the family does it. There's sort of there are many levels to this, but basically there's the family and there's other visitors, right? Or there's visitors. So first of all, as a family, what you're going to do is you're going to come home, you're going to have the treat in your hand before you open the door. So you might even have a little stash of treats right outside the door. You're going to have your treat in your hand. You're going to walk inside, and you're going to put the treat right to her nose and move it upwards. She probably knows sit, right?
Yes.
She's 8 months old, right? So you're going to ask her to sit. Let her see the treat. You're going to ask her to sit and give her the treat right away, and then ask for a sit again, because usually what happens is they'll sit, and then they'll jump up on you. So you're going to ask her to sit. If she jumps up on you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn around and leave the house.
Okay.
So she learns, if I sit, I get to greet them, and they say hi. And I think it helps them tremendously if you go down to their face, because that's what they want. Uh-huh. You know, their greeting ritual, they're doing what dogs do to greet, which is to make contact with your face. So if you go down after she's sat, it'll help her stay down.
Okay.
So that's really helpful. You can even start it before you come home. Sometimes they're so excited when you come home, they can barely even think or control themselves. So what you can do is you can just leave the house just out that same door for just a second, have your treats, walk back inside, and she won't be as excited, and it'll be easier for her to do what you want and get reinforced for it. You do the same thing with, you guys start that for a couple of weeks with visitors at first until you get it fixed with the family. Leashes are fine. You can just use them to just have your hand about 6 inches from the collar, and you're just going to push down on the leash so she can't jump up. You're not going to jerk her. That can really hurt their neck and spinal column, so don't do that. You're just going to push down so she can't jump up. But eventually you do the same thing with visitors, is you train your visitors to help you. They come. You ask for a sit, or maybe they ask for a sit. You give her the treat. Give it to her right away. Most people are slow. Don't wait too long.
Yeah.
Sit. She sits. Bang. She gets the treat right in her mouth. And your visitors won't be as fast as you are. But just tell them, if she jumps up, you're supposed to turn around and walk away. And over time, usually you're going to need 4 to 6 weeks, and you're going to have a really different dog.
Yeah.
But remember, no reinforcement if she jumps up. And be sure that the family isn't doing that inadvertently at other times. Well, it's hard not to, because they're pretty cute.
There you go, Mary. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. We had an email from Jane, who says, Bud is an orange tabby I rescued 6 years ago. He settled in well, but still needs to go outside to hunt and so forth. He loves the dogs, but he's rather nasty to his sweet brother. When Bud comes in at dusk, he eats, and then he attacks Buster. And he tries to bite him. He's also bitten me when I try to pick him up and give him a time out. Usually he'll settle down after an hour or two, but sometimes I have to keep him in another room at night. So Mr. Bud is not being a very good
kitty. No, and it's interesting, is the pattern...
The pattern sounds like when he's
really
out stimulating.
Predictable. Yeah, so he's outside, he gets stimulated, and he comes in. Is that the only time he goes after the other cat? Oh, it's an email. I'm talking
email.
To an email.
Well,
so it sounds like it.
It
so
sounds like
let's
it.
Presume. The nice thing about a behavioral problem that has a predictable pattern is that it has a predictable pattern.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of work around that. So there's nothing wrong with, at least for a while, just instantly putting him in another room to calm down. There's nothing wrong with doing that. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what I would do initially. Then what I'd start doing is gradually increase the amount of time he sits in that other room. And then when you let him out of the room, I want you to start do something with him. Give him sort of a transition time, so that rather than using all that energy and stimulation he has, cats really do seem to have an issue with overstimulation.
Yeah, they sure do.
You know, you stroke their belly 3 times, and the 4th time they bite your hand. And, you know, this is not an uncommon problem with a cat. So what I want you to do is start teaching him when he comes out of the room that you're going to play with him. Get a really great toy, the fishing pole kind of toy, where it's not your hand. You have a toy that dangles and he's interested in. Some cats who are good to go outside aren't too interested in toys. They're like, I know it's not a mouse, but you can usually find something. So find something he's interested in, and then get him in the habit of, as soon as he comes out of the room, then play with him for a little bit, and then gradually make his room time shorter and shorter, so that eventually you let him in the house, you play with him, with this indoor fishing pole toy. And he's used up some of that energy. He's calmed down a little bit. He's directed his energy to the appropriately rather than inappropriately. So that I would give that I would give that an 85% chance of working.
That makes really good sense.
If you're in the 15th percentile, I'll call us back.
Ralph in Brookfield, on to you. Hi, Ralph. Ralph, are you there?
No, bye, Ralph.
We lost Ralph. Okay, well, let's try Pat. Pat in East Troy. Hello, Pat.
Hi. Thanks, Ralph. That was my good luck. I don't know where to start, but first, I'm so glad to hear Patricia's voice again.
Oh, you sweetheart.
Oh, I missed you so much,
thanks.
I need you so much. I have a dog named Honey who is the most inappropriately named dog in the world. I've talked about her before, so this may sound familiar. I've had her now about 4 years, and I still can't let her off the leash or she takes off. She's just so full of excess energy and willfulness. She's a rescue dog, and if I had not agreed to adopt her and paid the $200 that was required, they would have put her down the next day.
Mm.
Because she's a very frightened dog of any surprises, which includes a person walking down the driveway that she didn't expect, or a car driving past her, or the other night she just took off when I let her out for her nightly trot.
Mm-hmm.
She just took off barking at the driveway, and there was nothing there.
Well, there was, but you know,
there had been something there.
There was something. It's just that it wasn't obvious to you or me, probably, and we probably, whatever it was, would have been like, that's nothing. You know, how old was she when you got her?
Terribly excitable. Just crazy excitable.
Okay. And was she an adolescent? Was she a teenager? Was she grown?
I think she was 1 year old in her first heat, and we had her spayed 2 weeks later.
Okay.
3 weeks later.
Well, there are a couple things. And here's, I'll give you the, you want the bad news first?
Yeah, let's do the bad first.
The bad news first is that it is just not possible to teach every dog to never take off away from you when they're off leash. I wish I could say that I have this magic, and I know there are people actually who say that they can. Some of their methods I'm not real comfortable with. So my statement is that you can't always, if you're always using humane methods. But you know what? For most dogs, you can manage it. Like you say, she took off sort of for her nightly trot. It's certainly, often you can increase the probability that they're not going to take off, they're not going to run away from you. Although it doesn't sound like she ran away in this case, she was just sort of barking in the driveway. So there are a couple issues. Obviously, you said there's a lot going on. There are a couple issues that we can talk about. One is her sort of taking off leash. And that's something that, gosh, it's hard to describe on the radio. If you work really, really hard on teaching a dog to stop when you say whoa, I like to say whoa because I rode horses for so long. Maybe you spend a year on that with a rescue dog who has learned it's fun to take off and has this long period of learning behind her, which is very much making your life much more difficult. But if you teach her whoa, so every time you say whoa, she stops, you have a lot better chance of getting a dog to come back to you. Most people, a dog starts to run away and they say come. And you need to remember that come means run towards me, but you're asking them first to do something else. Divide the behavior up into pieces. You're asking them to stop. So teach them on cue. And I would get a trainer, get a really great positive reinforcement-based trainer to come in. Teach her whoa, and then to run back to you when you call come. Is that going to be 100%? Yeah, probably not. So you still need to be really cautious. The other issue that you mentioned is a really important one, and I'm glad you mentioned it, this reactivity to being surprised.
Yeah.
It's so timely that you've mentioned this, because I'm actually just working on the section for the seminar in Madison on the fact that it looks as though, and I believe without question, that dogs can get PTSD, which is basically being hyper-aroused, easily startled. There's a whole suite of symptoms, but one of the most common ones is basically the sympathetic nervous system, the sort of autonomic nervous system that runs the machinery of your body without you thinking about it, gets set so that it's always on fight or flight. It's always ready for danger. And so you get individual animals who startle really, really easily. So that kind of dog, you can't take them into typical talk therapy, right?
Yeah.
But what you can do is you can work on her physiology. You can work on, first of all, behaviors that just help calm her. You know, teach her, it sounds really silly and so, I don't know, simplistic, but just teach her to do downstays and learn to regulate her, you know, herself. So lie down, stay, good girl. Positive methods, lots of treats. Ask her to stay for 2 seconds. She gets a treat while she's staying, not when she gets up. And then make the release boring. Okay, big deal, who cares? And ask her every evening to lie down and stay where you told her to in a relaxed fashion for a half an hour. Ask her to learn to wait at the door or to wait and sort of pause. You can do massage therapy. There's some really great dog massage therapists out there. You can do massage therapy. You can do Tellington touch kind of therapy. You can look at her internal physiology. And there's a whole range of things you can do there, from adjunctive kind of medicine that are argued to calm dogs. I've used Shen Calmer, which is a Chinese herbal medicine, on Willie for years and years, and it seems to have had a tremendously useful effect. And then, of course, there's Western medicine if it's really extreme. Doesn't sound like she lives in a sort of a constantly anxious state. So I would go sort of mild to moderate in terms of what level of intervention you're trying to use. But so work on that very, very separate from the issues about how attentive she is to you, because I think her internal physiology, you said she was sort of crazy when you got her. That's typical of dogs who are sort of desperate. So anything you can do to help calm her, both in terms of behavioral training and her internal physiology, even her diet, could be really helpful.
And thank you very much for calling. Good luck, Pat. Appreciate your call. We have Robin in Appleton with a question for you. Patricia, let's go to Robin. Hi, Robin.
Good morning. Patricia, first I want to tell you how much I missed your Saturday show calling all pets, and I don't even own any animals.
Oh, thank you. That's such a compliment. Larry and I always
love that
compliment. Thank you. We appreciate that.
So many fascinating things. But my daughter, who lives in Minneapolis, had been wanting to adopt a rescue dog, and she wanted to train it to be a companion dog, and this was partly for her own recovery from some things as well as just to have companion for herself. And she lives in an apartment complex that only allows smaller dogs, so she'd been looking for a while. But about 3 weeks ago, she got a miniature dachshund who apparently was lost during the Joplin tornado last.
Oh, my.
Oh.
And how it got to Minneapolis, I have no idea. But they estimate that he's about 1 to 2 years old, and he is extremely, extremely skittish. I just met about a week and a half ago, and he's around both people and other dogs, because since this apartment complex allows dogs, there are other people with dogs. And right now, the only person he'll let near him is my daughter. Mm-hmm. He would sniff my I'd put my fingers out, and he would sniff them. But after a while, if I tried to get any closer, he would back away. And he seemed interested, but he wouldn't let anybody else get near him. And right now, she's taking him to like a socialization class of some sort. But I wonder if can he ever be like a companion dog, or do you think he's too scarred from his earlier experience or his innate personality?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know,
hard to say on that, isn't it?
It's hard to say because we don't know basically who he can become in a year or two. Is going to be an integration of his genetics and his experience.
Yeah.
And we don't know what his genetics are. And we don't even know what that past experience is. So, you know, there's sort of three factors. There's the past, his genetics, and now. So all we have is now. So all you really can do is work on it and then reevaluate. You know, one of the things to do, and this is hard for people to do, but one of the things, if you have a dog with behavior problems that's extreme, is to ask yourself, this isn't what I was planning. Therefore, is this something I can deal with? You know, do I have the time? Do I have the energy? And is my home the right kind of place for a dog? Like right now, that would my home would be a nightmare for that little doxy because I travel so much. I'd have, you know, strangers coming in and out, yeah. house sitting, and so it would never be good for that dog for me to take him, even though I sort of know all the ins and outs about how to condition him. But basically, what I would do is work really hard, but part of what's hard is to not do some things, you know, rather than trying really hard to sort of force the issue. So what I would do is I would do classical conditioning, standard Pavlovian kind of conditioning where he learns to associate people he doesn't know with something he really loves. So usually food is the best thing. He's a little tiny doxy, so get little tiny pieces of food. You know, there's kibble made for small breeds. It's just the tiniest little pieces of kibble if he's a food hound. But if he's not, he needs something better, like little pieces of chicken or something. And basically what you're going to do, Mom, is you're going to try to help, but you're going to try by going in. You're not even going to extend your hand. You're just going to throw food around like a flower girl, you know? Mm-hmm. So go in, sit down. Dogs are always less afraid of you if you're sitting down or even sitting down on the ground. Don't make direct eye contact. And just throw food 10 feet away from you and then throw it 8 feet and then 5 feet and then 4 feet and then quit. Then okay. stop. And then the next session, you know, you start at 8 feet, you maybe go to 3.5 feet. You do those kind of sessions over and over and over again so that he is initiating the interaction and he learns to associate you with something good. I'm not sure if the dog was my client, I would suggest a socialization class right now.
Okay.
That might be too much. And, you know, you need to remember is that if the stimuli that's scaring him is overwhelming, you're not going to get the kind of classical conditioning. You're going to get the reverse, actually.
Yeah.
What you can do is you could actually teach. I actually taught a dog to be terrified of lamb. Yeah.
Well, not your original intention.
Not my original intention. Yes, yes. Talk about backfiring. It was actually ironic, a dog who was afraid of the backfiring of traffic on the highway. And I tried to counter condition it, but the sound we were producing was overwhelming to him, even though it was actually a rifle a half a mile away. It wasn't even a rifle. It was a shotgun a half a mile away. Anyway, so the whole idea is to go way slower and way more gradually than your instinct tells you to do.
Okay.
You ever think, like, should I keep going? The answer is, like, no. It's always no. Stop while you're ahead. And I would maybe pull him out of class because, I mean, talk to the trainer and ask your daughter how he's doing in class. But if he's sitting under the chair shaking, you're just causing harm.
Okay.
You know? Okay?
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate you going.
Thing.
Yeah. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist and dog trainer, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, a normal pledge drive goes for 12 days in the fall, our fall pledge drive. Not this next one, though. We've slashed it in half. Why risk that? Because we know you like more programs and less on-air fundraising. So I hope you'll support a shorter pledge drive with your gift of any amount at WPR.org. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments for Patricia McConnell as we talk about animal behavior and dealing with those pets. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a comment there. Jody in Superior has a question, I believe. Hi. Patricia. Hi, Jody.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have in our house 7 cats. They're all indoor, all spayed and neutered. 6 of them are 10 years old and older. The 7th one just came to us about a month ago. He's about 4 months old, a male kitten. And he gets along with all the cats, except that he has this bad habit of jumping on the back of them and biting the back of their neck. So we had him neutered, thought that would take care of it, but he still does that. And they all have little bite marks on the back of their neck, and I'm just wondering if this is something that he might outgrow.
Ooh. wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait to find out. And it sounds as though none of the cats are explaining the rules to him. None of the cats are correcting him for it. They're just passively letting him do this.
Well, they try to get away from him. They try to get away from him, but nobody...
But nobody's gone after him and said, cut that out. Cut that out. Yeah, you know, you just wish that you could ask them to help you out, you know? It's like if you just... When you get a little kitten and elder cats, you know, if a little kitten learns when he's quite young and not as strong and agile, that wasn't a good idea, usually the problem is solved. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, it happens a lot. I had a puppy, just bully Willie, he was horrible. He was a lovely little puppy, but he was horrible to Willie. And if Willie had just once said, cut that out, it would have been all over. But it wasn't. So you're going to have to be the... You're going to be the enforcer, and it's tricky. It's a tricky situation because, you know, there you are on the other side of the room, right? Yeah. So first of all, are you preventing this from happening? Are you keeping them separate when you're not there?
No.
Okay, I would prevent it. If he's actually biting through the skin of your elderly cats, that's a health problem. So I would keep him separate. Okay. My guess is that he wants to play. He's trying to get. Do any of them play with him?
Yes, they will play. Yes, but then he will get excited and jump on them.
Okay, so you know, back to we were talking earlier about cats and their arousal levels. This is a problem for actually all growing mammals who sort of need to learn emotional control, and the cats aren't able to do it. So one thing I do is, first of all, keep them separate when you're not there. Let them interact, but watch to see how long he has to play with another cat before he sort of falls into being overly aroused and becoming really what sounds like it's being aggressive. So say you watch, and he'll play for like 5 minutes, and then minute five and a half, he goes after cat A. I would stop the play at 4.5 minutes, take him in another room, play with him with a toy so that he's doing something appropriate. So basically you want to intervene and interrupt and then redirect. That's sort of the mantra of so many behavioral problems. Intervene, interrupt, and redirect. I could just say that over and over and over again. It's the McConnell method. No, it's not mine. It's everybody's method. Who knows what they're doing? So that's what I would do, and I would prevent, because I am worried that if he grows up getting away with this, he's going to be a little hooligan.
Yeah, we've got a little situation here with a 2-year-old cat that Roger emailed about. My aunt has a black male Manx cat, 2 years old, very aggressive, scratched my daughter twice when she has tried to pet him, also tried to scratch the rest of us. He also hisses when we just come into the room he's in. He will also jump up and on the tables and counters and hiss and show his teeth. My aunt knows he is a problem. What can we do?
Wow, that's extreme.
Very extreme.
That is, and I should tell you that, 23 years or so I've been doing this, I can't think of many cats who, if you just walk into the room, hiss. Something's really wrong there. Yeah, this is so the first thing to know, it's always good to be able to put what's going on in your life in perspective. So this is a 10. From a 0 to 10, this is a 10. I would immediately... call my veterinarian and get a full health check, because this is the kind of behavior you often see with animals who are in pain. Basically, an animal saying, stay away from me, stay away from me, stay away from me. Now, I don't know the background of this cat. Maybe he was a feral kitten who never was socialized to people. So it could be about his early development.
Sure.
Such that he's afraid of everybody. If that's true, then I would walk into the room and I'd open the door and not walk into the room, mm-hmm. and throw a handful of tiny little really good healthy kitty treats.
Yeah.
And then leave. So again, you're classically conditioning him to like it when you walk into the room. So I would start with my vet.
Yeah.
I would try classical conditioning, and I would try training. Start teaching him some tricks. So if he starts getting a little rude, you can ask him to do something appropriate and then reinforce him for it.
Let's turn to Steve in Wales, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Sheltie, about 7 years old. It's a male. He's a male. And he has always been very bad, almost, you know, takes a ferocious turn around small children. And we've had him when our children are a little bit older, so it hasn't been that much of an issue. Now we have a grandchild, okay? And, you know, the first time he saw the grandchild, it was just growl, bark. And so we obviously have to keep him locked up and separated. But it's just, it creates a real challenge for us. I don't know if there's anything we can do, but
boy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, good for you for preventing. You know, a lot of people are very optimistic, you know, and hope like, oh, you know, I think maybe it'll be fine this time. And the last thing we want is some dog you dearly love sinking its teeth into the face of a grandchild you dearly love. And we all know what happens. There are millions of dog bites every year. So absolutely, absolutely, there's nothing wrong with prevention. One of the things, I was actually just writing an article about some of the differences between the general dog-loving public and professional dog trainers. And you know what one of the biggest differences is? It's not, I mean, obviously an ability to know how to train and how to use operant conditioning. Obviously, that's huge. But I think the bottom line first difference is that trainers never hesitate to manage problems. I can't tell you how often people are like, well, I just put him in the other room. You know, this is a professional dog trainer. It's like, well, you know, he's rude to company. I just put him in the other room. You know, I'd rather spend time training him on other stuff than this.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with putting your Sheltie away when the grandchild comes. Now, if the grandchild's going to live with you, obviously that's a problem. But presuming that's not true, there's nothing wrong with putting your Sheltie away. Just make it really fun for the Sheltie. Give him a chew toy. You might even want to start conditioning and saying, oh, Julie's here. Say Julie's the name of your great. Julie's here. Oh, let's go in the other room in your crate and have your chew bone that you never get unless Julie comes. So that's one thing to do. The next phase is definitely get a coach. Don't try this on your own. The stakes are too high, right? Get somebody who's a progressive trainer who knows how to use operant conditioning, a certified behaviorist or a vet behaviorist who really, really knows, who's going to come do a house call. Don't hire somebody who's just going to hand you a piece of paper. That is not good enough. They need to be with the dog. They need to be with you. They need to show you and train you how to use conditioning. So you well may be able to work through this, but it would be something I would do very cautiously and slowly and only with an expert. And otherwise, there's nothing wrong with management and prevention.
There you go. Thank you very much for that question. Dan in Partyville, we turn to you next. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. Thank you. I have kind of a silly question here because I'm going to give my dogs human feelings. I have two rescue dogs, Mike and Apollo. They both love to go for rides. Apollo is sometimes real good in the car and sometimes not. We'll have to put him on a leash. But if we park somewhere, he just goes berserk, barking, barking. You can see his nose prints on the window. The other dog's very calm. We've thought about not taking them for rides at all, but is that fair for my other dog that's not rambunctious to not take him for rides?
Oh, what a good question.
They're inseparable. They've been together for over 4 years.
That's a really good question. You know, and it happens so often. You have one dog who's great, another dog is a problem, but then you don't want to basically have the other dog suffer. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really common. So there are a couple of ways you could do it. One is keep in mind that your well-behaved dog in the car, what's that dog's name?
Micah.
So Micah, keep in mind that you know, Micah isn't going to know all morning that you're planning to go out, right?
Right.
So if you decide to leave Apollo and Micah in the house, certainly there's going to be a minute or two where you pick up the keys and Micah looks at you like, oh, can't I go too? But I you're right to not let Apollo sort of keep working through this bad behavior of barking and being really distressed in the car. That's probably not very fun for Micah either. So there's nothing wrong with give them a chew bone again, you know, give them something wonderful. Make sure it's safe. Don't leave them with something that they could get stuck in their throat, but give them something safe to chew on. when you leave. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But you could also start trying to work on Apollo. You know, maybe you could treat Apollo, train him to be more comfortable. You could certainly try a crate. A lot of dogs are more comfortable when they're crated in a car. By the way, there are so many dogs who are great with people, great with other dogs when they're loose. And then some of them are great, but when they're on the leash, they're not so good. You put dogs in a car, Larry, and I don't know what it is. A car brings out the worst. The teeth and the growling and the barking and that, you know, you look like you've created these monsters. And then you let them out of the car and they're like, hello, how are you? So it's not an uncommon problem. Crating really helps a lot. It seems to take away some of that sort of defensive protectiveness. You can also classically condition it. I had a border collie that a million years ago when I bred a few litters, I sold a border collie, Mandy, who would look really nasty if you came towards her in the car. And we conditioned her. We just had people walk towards the car. The window was partway open, not too much, so the dog couldn't jump out. And we just tossed treats through the window. Granted, you get little pieces of food all over your car. You need to be thoughtful about this. But basically, she got to the point where it was like, please come towards me. Please come towards me. So you could try conditioning Apollo to be more comfortable in the car. So you could take either method. You might want to do both. You know, try the conditioning when you have time. Leave the dogs at home when you don't.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have many more callers online here. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org as well if you have a question for our guest, Patricia McConnell. And she will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Have you ever watched a pet do something kind of unexpected? Maybe you shook your head and wondered what in the world is going through their mind. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer, and author, Patricia McConnell. She's with us until 12:30 and wants to hear about what your pet is up to and maybe what has you perplexed. What has Fido or Fluffy been doing? Patricia might have a good idea, frankly, about what's going on, and she can help you out. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like on that page while you're there. You'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics, and you can post your question there. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Patricia after this quick look at the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your pet's behavior today with Dr. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer, and great friend. And it's great to have her back. And she comes by every so often. It's always fun to have her with us to answer your questions. And certainly, if you have a question or comment, join us at 800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment, or a photo there. We'd love to hear from you. And Patricia, we have Ralph in Brookfield, who's been waiting quite a while. So let's give him a chance. Ralph, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. We adopted a 2-year-old dachshund about a year ago, and he has problems. He doesn't go in our yard. We have an acre yard, and we walk him and walk him. It's not till we walk him down the street, and then he'll either go to the bathroom.
And isn't it too bad to have a dog who's so clean and so fast
go in his own yard
that he's driving you crazy?
Yeah.
You know what I do? I would try, first of all, get some great treats in your pocket, and I mean great. I mean, like, get his attention treat. Like, was that a piece of liver? So what you're going to do is take him, first thing in the morning when you know he needs to go, can you go through your yard into the neighborhood, or do you have to go?
Sure.
Okay, ideal. Go through your yard, into the neighborhood, walk around just a tiny little bit, and then go back into the yard.
Ah.
And then basically you're going to sort of go back and forth and back and forth. And especially first thing in the morning, most dogs are like all mammals, you know, it's like, I need to go.
I got to pee.
My bladder is full. Yeah, and all women. You know? So got to pee. So basically you're going to sort of finesse this. You're going to go through the yard out into the great outdoors, but you're not going to go very far. And then you're going to go back in the yard, go back and forth. Maybe you're 5 feet outside of the yard, back and forth, until he pees as close to the yard as you can manage. So, you know, say he doesn't pee in the yard, but he pees 5 feet from the gate. Yay, give him a treat. That's good. Okay. Just keep finessing him back and forth, until the first time he goes in the yard. And here's what I want you to do. First of all, be sure you're prepared. So this is the hard part. Every time you go out, especially early in the morning when he's most likely to do this, you need to have a whole bunch of great treats. And it's easy to say to do, and it's hard to do until you get it a whole new routine in your brain. So do not leave the house without great treats. Have them sit in the refrigerator. Keep them ready. And then when he finally does go actually inside the yard, you're going to jackpot him. And what jackpot means is you're going to give him 10 or 15 treats in a row, one at a time. Don't give him a handful. That's one big treat. You're going to give him 15 treats. That has 15 times the impact, or I made that number up. It has a lot more impact on his brain, on his physiology, on his reward centers. So basically he's going to be like, what did I do? I get a piece of liver after liver, and then there's chicken, and there's steak, and then there's liver. And he's going to be working really hard, even unconsciously. What did I do to get that? How can I get that to happen again? So then keep up the jackpotting whenever he goes, and then gradually over the weeks, you know, just make it a smaller and smaller treat until finally it's become a habit, and there you go.
What about bowel movements? Will that eventually transfer over?
Start with urine.
Yeah.
Yep, start with urine, because that's easiest to get out. And dogs usually have to walk a bit to get their bowels moving.
Yeah.
So start with urine, and then once you get that turned around, then it's going to be easier to get bowel movements.
There you go.
Okay. And one thing you might do is when you pick up, obviously you pick up when he's going out and about in the neighborhood, you have some little baggie or something, is take your little baggie with you and then put that feces in your own yard.
Hmm.
So it smells, so there's a smell there of feces. You can even take, I've actually grab some grass that some people would be averse to this, but say you have a plastic bag over your hand, pull up some of the grass that he peed on and put that in your backyard, because smell is what tells the dog this is where to go to the bathroom.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. David in Green Bay, we are on to you. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. I've got a dog that is a boxer English Bulldog mix.
Okay.
In Mac. And I tried to find a new home for him a little while back, and I found a great guy who had had a boxer before, and it just seemed like a great fit. However, a week later, the fellow, Bob was his name, gave me a call back and said that the Mac had attacked him.
Ooh.
Yeah, and bit his arm, his stomach, and his side.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So my biggest question is, I'm still wanting to get a new home for him. And so I don't know what kind of options I have.
Yeah, that's a very, very it's the simple question with a complicated answer. And the most responsible thing I could say is this is the time to hire an expert. This is the time to get somebody in who has qualified to basically sit down with you, meet the dog, talk to you about the dog's behavior when you're together, and then talk to the gentleman. We don't know what that gentleman did. Talk to him, get their best evaluation about what happened and what precipitated this attack. Sounds like a very pretty serious attack.
Yes, it does.
And so obviously you are in some, there's some legal responsibilities, you know, you're going to have. You know that it happened. If you adopt him out and there's a similar problem, then you could be liable. So obviously you need a new home for the dog, and I won't even ask you why. Obviously you have your reasons. But I would bring an expert in. I would bring somebody who has evaluated aggression cases before, who has great people skills, which is not always true, if I could just say. I'm like sort of speaking with appeasement behavior right now. I have my head down. I'm wagging my tail and like with my head down. But it's just true that there are some people who are brilliant with dogs who aren't great with people. You need somebody who's got great social skills so that the person who adopted Mac is going to be really honest about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. And then you're going to have to go from there and basically take their advice about whether they believe, the two of you, it's safe to adopt this dog out.
Yeah. And if it's not, that's a bridge to be crossed.
That's a bridge to be crossed, yeah.
Thanks, David. Mark in Columbus, would turn to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I've got a quick question for you. I've got two labs, a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old. And my wife, when we got married a couple of years ago, she had what is now a 5-year-old golden retriever. Never had any behavioral or aggression issues with any of them.
Good.
But this Christmas, we are expecting our first child.
Ooh, congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what advice you would have to introduce the newborn to the household with three dogs.
Yeah, it's a great question. One thing you can do is you can prepare ahead of time. You can start bringing the newborn's clothing home so they smell it. Once the baby has a name, you can even start teaching them what the name is. So you bring home the clothing or maybe a diaper or whatever, let them smell it, go sniff, 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 and then say, "That's Josie. That's Josie." You can start carrying a doll. You can wrap it around a doll and carry it around and hold it in your arms and then put the doll down and say that, say sniff, sniff. Be careful and use your voice in a very calming, sort of soothing kind of way. Be careful. Usually what happens is that there's just no problem as long as you never leave the baby and the dogs alone. Don't ever do that. Don't ever do that. For a whole variety of reasons, but obviously the baby's incredibly vulnerable, and there have been tragic fatalities related to that, even with really wonderful dogs. So you're not going to do that. Usually there are no problems until the kid starts walking
around.
That's the problem. The problem you're going to have, you got three big dogs, and the worry is that they're going to barrel over your kid, you know, and knock her over, or one of the dogs is going to object to sort of having somebody fall on them or having a little tail pulled. So I would start counter conditioning to things that kids tend to do. They reach out and they grab. So start counter conditioning. Put your hand around a little tail and squeeze a little bit and then give the dog a treat. Grab a hold of an ear gently and then pull a little bit and then give a little treat. Don't do this too much, or else you'll just, you know, you do it like 10 times in the row, they're like, "Well, you cut this out." You're just going to irritate them. You want to make this a fun game. So always end while they're still having a good time. That's something you can do. So basically you need the game is to train both of them at the same time. You have to train the child to be polite to the dogs and the dogs to be polite to the child. Given you got three big ones, you might even teach them to be gated off in a couple of rooms so they're used to being, you know, you're just not going to be in the living room right now when little Josie is.
We do that already.
That's good.
There you go. I think you'll be in great shape. Just be cautious and try that little conditioning. I think that might help once the toddler starts toddling around on the floor.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, appreciate the call. Ann in Aliva, we are turning to you next. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. In the end of May or the beginning of June, my daughter gave me a mama cat that had some kittens. She just the mama cat annoyed her. They had other animals, and my husband and I were looking for some kittens. We wanted some kittens so we could have some outside cats. We live in the country, and they are absolutely not house cats. They are totally outside. The problem we are having is the triplets, which is Mariah, Haas, and Bart. They're all three little marmalade cats. As soon as the light goes on in the morning, they're by the door. And we go to work we usually leave about 4:30 in the morning. And when you turn off the light, you know, they're there, you trip over them, or they want in the house right away. We don't feed them on a regular basis. We feed them just maybe once or twice a week because we do want them to hunt. We want them to be mousers. But we have to find some way to keep them out of the house and out from under our feet. And winter's coming, and you know what that means. We want in even more. And, you know, I'm opposed to kicking them out of the way or squirt gunning them with water to keep them away. I'm just trying to think of something else that would be an alternative to that.
Oh, how long do we have here? There's so many issues that come up. One is...
Other than food, because I don't want them to get in the habit of coming to the door and getting fed.
Well, yeah, you don't want them to get fed at the door because that would teach them that it's even more fun to go to the door. It's hard not to smile because you said these are absolutely not house cats. It's like, and basically they're saying, oh, yes, we are.
Here's someone. My husband is a smoker. He's not allowed to smoke in the house. So he'll go, we have an attached garage. He'll go sit out in his chair. And he's like, you know, we live next to the highway, we're in the country, we have coyotes, don't get attached to the cats. And I'm a farm girl, I know that cats are going to get hit, you know, they're going to get killed. Who do you think is out there playing with these cats? It's him.
Okay, well, husbands are the hardest animals to train. I mean, this is not news, right? We all know this.
I'd probably agree with that.
But of course, if you're a guy, you could say the same thing about a wife, right? Or, you know, your girlfriend or your mother or, you know, anybody that you have a close relationship with. But actually, I think some training of all of the mammals at your farm would be a really good idea. First of all, you know, I live on a farm too, and I have sheep and I have grain, and that means, and I feed the birds, and that means I have way more chipmunks and mice and voles than most other people do. And those are good animals to have, you know. I like hawks. I like there to be food for them too. So, however, I don't want them scurrying around so much that it's noisy when I walk into the barn. So I have an indoor-outdoor cat. I'm very lucky in that she preys on mice rather than birds. And there's a very healthy hawk population around, so I don't think she's destroying the prey base. But, you know, you say you live by a highway. It's inevitable that one of the cats is going to get hurt. It sounds like you need some mousers. So one of the things you might want to be thinking about, first of all, is do you really need all three? You know, it sounds like you may have some.
Well, I mean, we still have the mama cat, too.
Yeah, so that's four. So one thing you might want to do is think about that. Think about, and basically you want to create a situation that's competitive with your house. So create another place that's as fun as the house. So, you know, it's warm, it's cozy, there's nothing wrong with, you know, putting little cat beds out there. You feed them out there, they get really good food out there. Basically, rather than learning to go into the garage and hanging out with your husband, they're going to go hang out somewhere else. You know, you could even, I've known people who fenced areas that were cat-proof, that kept the cats where they wanted them. I know a lot of people think that's an outrageous thing to do, but we don't think it's crazy with dogs anymore, and they did think that was crazy in the 50s, so sort of a shift of perspective that you might want to consider. Most important.
There's a problem with that. We have a miniature dachshund, and they will actually wait outside the back door for him to come out to play with.
Aww. Wow. So all fun things come from the house, right?
Yeah.
Your husband, the food, the dachshund.
We actually kennel our dog in the summer. He's got a little kennel out there. They squeeze through the bars to go in there and play with him. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Okay, so I'm going to the bottom line here. Why can't the cats go in the house? Why can't those cats go in the house?
Well, you know, I've had house cats before, and my dachshund is 10 years old. And if you know anything about dachshunds, which I'm sure you do, they hate to go out in the winter and pee or do their number two duty. And Smeagol, the last few years, in the winter, he'll go out. You can leave him out for 20 minutes, and the minute you got your back turned, he'll go to the bathroom. So there's been places in the house he's gone, and I just know that if I bring those cats...
Oh, you're worried that the cats will go too?
Absolutely. And,
well,
you know,
I wish we could just all quit and Larry and I could drive to your farm because, you know, I'll bet we could get that turned around. I'll bet we could have the cats not going in your house, but we also need to do some husband training. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Larry and I will be there in a couple hours Anyway, you know, try some of the things I talked about. Try creating a nicer place for the cats where it's really, really fun. Try feeding them there. And train your husband to not pet them in the garage. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Give it a try. And I'd feed the cats. You know, I mean.
Oh, is she not feeding them at all?
A little.
Yeah. Oh, I would definitely feed them. You know, definitely want to feed them. They'll still mouse, by the way.
They'll still mouse.
Which is one of the problems with cats outside is because even though they're getting fed, they'll deplete a prey base for other animals. But I would definitely feed them. Feed them a good, healthy food. And they're going to want to go there as much, at least as much as they'll want to go to the garage and cuddle with hubby.
Tammy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Tammy.
Good morning. Actually, good afternoon. My question regards my lab and golden retriever will be play fighting with their mouths, which I think, Patricia, you know what I'm talking about. And then the golden will whip around and present his backside to the Labrador. And he also does that with me playing with toys. He'll run back, jump on the couch with me, and flip around and present his backside to me. So I'm just wondering what that might be.
I have no idea.
Never heard of it.
I've seen dogs do that, and I've actually heard people give theories. Like, if a dog sits on you, it means something, and I don't have a clue. I really don't have a clue. The only thing I can think of, and I'm just speculating, is that some dogs do mount in play. It's not sexual. It's about basically...
dominance, maybe?
Yeah, we think it might have to do with status. That's sort of controversial. But usually mounting seems to be dogs who do it a lot of vertical play. They're up on their hind legs. And if they do these standovers or mounting behavior, usually that is the dog who's going to get the pork chop if you drop it in between the two of them. Mm. So that's it seems to be related to that. So it might be that your golden is basically soliciting.
No, I'm sorry. I said mouth like they're... you know, like, wah, wah, wah.
No, but you said your gold presents his butt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
right,
I'm
which
sorry.
Is
yes,
which is possibly, yeah. Basically, a solicitation of saying, okey-dokey, time to jump on me now. So that is the only thing I can think of what it actually means. And I certainly, it's not a problem. I wouldn't worry about it. You might even want to put it on cue. That's what I do.
It's just funny.
Put it on cue. Make it a party joke. You know, say something like, you know, I don't know, some joke.
Show me your bottom.
Show me your bottom. Or, you know, do you want to look like J-Lo? Or, you know, I don't know. You know, what's that song? I like big butts that cannot lie. You know? Turn it into a party joke. Why not?
Yeah, bottoms up.
There you go.
Judith came up with bottoms
up. That's good. Good work, Judith.
There you go. Thanks, Tammy. And let's see. We got Ann in Manitowoc. Ann, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Our household is on the list of people that miss your show. So I'm glad finally to be talking to you. We have an almost 5-year-old beagle, and we crate him in bed at night. We crate him at night, and we can't get him to go in by himself. My husband actually picks him up and puts him in there. Now, previous dogs we've had, they've gone into the crate no problem at all. So I'm wondering if we can retrain him to go in.
Once he's in, does he settle down comfortably?
Yes.
Oh, good, good. Oh, then this is not going to be a difficult issue. You're just going to take little tiny treats and you're going to toss them right in front of the crate. Not inside, just in front of the crate. Let him eat that. Then toss another one partway in. Don't try to shut the crate then. You're going to have these crate training sessions separate from when you actually put him in the crate.
So a different time of the day.
Different time of the day. So 2-3 times a day. All you need is like 20 seconds. You're going to get some treats. Toss them by the crate, then in the crate, then farther and farther in the crate, and let the dog come right out again. So he goes in, gets a treat, comes out. Goes in, gets a treat, comes out. As you're doing that, when you toss the treat in, make a very clear hand gesture, sort of fling your hand like you're pointing towards the crate, inside the crate, and say, crate up. Don't say crate up until he's started to go inside on his own. And once he learns that if he goes in the crate and gets food and can come out again, he'll start going in willingly. Be patient at first. A lot of dogs are like, oh, you're going to put me in there. So be really patient at first. Don't do it during the same time of day, as Larry said, when normally you crate him up. And then gradually over time, start to mesh the training sessions with sort of the functional need to actually put him in the crate. And you'll find he'll trot in there just fine.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia, I wanted to go back. You're going to be speaking at the Wisconsin Humane Society event on October 13th. That's in Milwaukee.
It's a fundraiser for Wisconsin Humane Society in Milwaukee, October 13th at 7 o'clock. And we're doing a big seminar here in Madison. Me and Ken Ramirez. This is one of my last one-day seminars, by the way. I'm doing one day. Ken is doing a day. It's going to be really, really exciting. That's actually filling up fast. So go to my website, patriciamcconnell.com. There's all kinds of great stuff going on. And come up and see me if you heard about it on the show and say hi. And then I can say hi. Larry misses you.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. And again, it's patriciamcconnell.com.
That's right.
Thanks, Patricia. You'll come back again?
Nah, maybe.
Okay. She will.
So.
She'll come back. I promise. She'll be back. Oh, man. Tomorrow at 11, Dane County Extension horticulture educator Lisa Johnson will be here to talk about fall garden preparation and what to prioritize on your garden to-do list. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.